Who's gonna solve the murder of Bruce Wayne?
I am gonna find who did this.
Anybody wanna give me a crash course on being vigilante?
Are you really the Joker's daughter?
Wonder who will protect Gotham now that Batman is dead?
Welcome back to the Gotham Knights Watch podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Jake.
Brought to you as part of the Phantom Limb Media Podcast Network. So for other pop culture podcasts, go to phantomlimb.com.
We want to welcome you guys back to our episode recaps. Tonight we're going to be covering episode 8, Belly of the Beast. I wanted to say thank you to our guest star last week, Ben. Thank you for filling in for me on episode 7, Good to be Bad. It was a really fun episode. I was able to watch it, although I wasn't able to sit in on the review with you guys. But it was very fun to see Eunice return. I was excited.
Oh, I love Eunice.
She's so great. And there were some new budding romances and quite a bit going on. So it was a really good episode, and you guys did a great job covering it.
Thanks. Yeah, we missed you, but glad to have you back this week.
Well, this was a big one to come back to. It was a very exciting episode. What were your initial thoughts this week?
So first I want to say Belly of the Beast is written by David Paul Francis and Nate Gualtieri. I think they did a great job with this one. We had so much happen. Great cliffhanger here. I very much enjoyed it and was kind of on the edge of my seat the whole time.
Yeah, there was a lot of tense moments, a lot of good development with the story that they've been building, and some very exciting reveals. And a lot of questions. Still have a lot of questions.
always more questions. All right, so should we jump right into it?
I think let's do that.
All right, so we open up with two guys opening a trunk, making a deal, when a grappling gun comes and pulls those two guys back. We hear a bunch of off-screen fighting, some gunfire, etc. And then when it gets kind of quiet, Turner and Carrie show up and are looking and seeing all these guns in the trunk.
I really like this POV shot of being in the trunk, just seeing the viewpoint of a bunch of guns, but the guards being drawn back into the starry dark night and just hearing the noises. I thought that was a pretty cool way to handle that opening scene.
I agree, because as soon as we see that grappling gun, we know who's behind it.
Yeah.
And so it was, yeah, telling a lot with just a little.
Well, they are quick to dispatch these gun smugglers and tie them up and get them ready for the GCP to show up, who is really increased their response time throughout this first season.
Mm-hmm.
They are very quick to respond and showing up, and unfortunately, the Knight's Ride is not there waiting for them like they had originally planned, it seems.
I do love how Harper marked each of the guys that they tied up.
It's writing on their foreheads.
Yeah, the courtesy of the Gotham Knights and careful this one bites. I thought that was a nice little small thing. Fortunately, Colin does show up just in time in a taco food truck.
It's the only thing he could find and steal in enough time to come get them. It plays a little ring on their way up, which was kind of fun.
Yeah. And back at the Belfry, Harper is still kind of laying into him, and Colin's like, my watch isn't working. I'm sorry. I would have been there, but...
Yeah, if this was some Walmart cheap sports watch or something, it'd be forgivable. But he's been wearing one of the quartz watches that they took off... Well, that they repurposed after the mutants' failed heist in City Hall in the earlier episodes. And you would think that a very high-end, very expensive watch wouldn't just randomly stop working.
No, you wouldn't. And so he goes off to look at all the other watches to get a new one that will work. While Carrie and Turner are talking, Turner's kind of down because, yes, they're... you know, stopping all these guns from getting into the hands of criminals, but they're not any closer to stopping the court.
I thought it was important to note here that Duella is ready to join them back at the Belfry, but she wasn't on the gun smuggler bust up. She was waiting for them. She's not in doing the hero work like everybody else is.
No. She's telling them, don't forget, we're still wanted fugitives, so let's stop trying to be heroes and clear our names.
Yeah, she's much more worried about saving her own skin than anybody else's at this point.
I thought it was kind of important lines where she said that any leverage that we had, we gave away just to save that cop's family. And Carrie's like, well, it wasn't a choice. And Duell is like, no, there's always a choice. We just made a bad one. Really shows where her priorities are.
Yeah, she is. There are times where she feels like an integral part of the team, and then definitely times where she is holding the rest of them at an arm's length. And at moment's notice, could betray them, could just leave. She is not nearly as connected to all of them as it seems. Although I feel like we pull a little bit of that back this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see some of what she actually cares about towards the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Who she actually cares about towards the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
While they're discussing what they're going to do, because they've been decoding the ledger and finding out where these drug dealers are and these gun smugglers are, Colin notices that he can't just quickly replace his watch with one of the other ones from the loot bag because they're all broken. They're all broken in the exact same way.
Yeah, he lines up those court watches and they show the same time and then they all kind of spin around. And they're not sure what they're actually doing, but they're pretty sure that they're working exactly as they're meant to.
And we get the title screen here. So I'm going to point this out. I don't know if it was an accident or maybe they were just seeing if the current generation of youth watching this show actually knows how to tell analog time or not. But when we see the watch stop before the title screen, it's on 8:21 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to make a mental note of that here, okay?
Okay.
All right. So when we come back from the title, we're with Harvey and Cressida. Last week, she came to him to try to get some help in saving her own skin, and she was ready to divulge some secrets about the court if he was able to protect her.
Yeah, so he's bringing her to a safe house because she wants full immunity and an order of protection at the federal level, not the Gotham City level. And then that's when she'll talk. So he is working on it, but, you know, those things take time, so he isn't getting any answers yet.
Well, and she knows that the court will kill them both if they find out what she's about to do.
Mm-hmm.
And although he seems sympathetic to her cause, he definitely is using her for information. Like,
oh, yeah.
She helped kill his really good friend, and he is not doing this out of the kindness of his heart to save her skin. He needs some information out of her.
Absolutely. So a very different environment. We leave that crappy little safe house and go to the March house. Rebecca is helping guide Lincoln to his bed. He's using a cane as he's walking around. You know, he just woke up from his coma last episode after getting stabbed by the Dallin.
Yeah, how long do you think he has been in recovery? Because he had a sword go through his abdomen, right?
Like, uh-huh.
Yeah. Now he's up shuffling around.
Yeah. I'm having trouble, like, telling how much time is passing in between episodes.
Yeah.
But I think impaled like that, I would think it would be a little bit longer. But as you pointed out, the Talon act as a surgeon, and so he probably knew exactly where to go.
Yeah,
how to miss everything. Damage.
Yeah, I completely forgot I had mentioned that before. But yes, that makes a lot of difference. And I was trying to scan my notes here because there's a line later about Carrie says that it's better than being home studying for, I think she said midterms in mm-hmm. the line.
Oh, I think,
which
yeah.
would put it at halfway through the school year. So we don't really know when in the school year the show started, but maybe we've had, you know, maybe they've been on the run for 4 months or so. Three, 4 months, maybe?
Yeah, that could be.
That would kind of fit. Right. I mean, it's not like they're out busting these gun smugglers up every night. They've got to plan a little bit.
It would make sense that they wouldn't have, like, a heartwarming Thanksgiving episode or anything like that. Usually those episodes kind of help pace out what the timing of a show, but...
Oh, man. I desperately hope in future seasons that we start getting heartwarming Thanksgiving episodes or other holiday episodes that coincide with specific calendar moments.
Oh.
That would be great.
That would be great.
Maybe one Julian Day might show his face. His little bald tattooed head. Anyways, so he is pushing himself to recover as quickly as he can. He's already up, moving around. Again, I'd like to make note here that he is walking around with the use of a cane.
Yes, and she helps him get into bed, and she leaves to go get another pillow or something for back support. He drops his phone and goes to pick it up and finds a cufflink marked with HD.
All right. So to all of those cheaters out there, maybe you can answer this question. If you were at your lover's house, went home, and you wear a fancy suit that has cufflinks, and you noticed you were missing a cufflink, wouldn't you immediately call that woman and be, or that other person, and be like, hey, I'm missing a cufflink. Spare no expense to find this thing.
Well, in Harvey's defense, he does have a lot of blackout moments.
That's true.
So he may not think that he lost it there.
I'd love to see him pull out his like dresser drawer and there just be like 50 HD cufflinks. No, 49 HD cufflinks because one's missing. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's shame on Harvey, buddy. You should have picked that stuff up because Lincoln is not happy.
No, but he's trying to act like everything's fine. But when Rebecca turns around, she looks panicked.
Oh, the look they share, they both know the other one knows that they know. Yeah, there's a very, very much knowing looks being passed between the two of them. And he thanks her. And I wanted to ask what that thank meant to you when he said, because that's all he says after that to her. She gets the pillows tucked in behind him and he just says, thank you.
I had seen that as him just playing the role.
Okay.
Of dutiful husband thanking his wife for helping him. But you saying that, it sounds like maybe there was.
I think it's a final thing that he needed. I think that it's her death note, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think she makes it out of this episode while I'm watching it at this moment. I don't think she is going to have a happy ending. And that was the last piece he needed to make the decisions to do whatever he's got to do or whatever he might have been putting off. And that was the thank you. And it was very... That's it was very sad. Weighted in when I was watching it. But as she's walking away, she's scared. You could see she's feeling the same thing. Mm-hmm. She's not wanting to be around her husband anymore. But we don't find out what happens to her yet. We jump over to the Belfry.
Yeah, over there, they're working on the watches, and Stephanie has joined them. We get the times 7:21 a.m., 3:05 p.m., and 9 p.m. on the dot.
So they say it's 7:21 here. And then they show, and I sent you a screenshot of it, they show you the face of one of the watches.
Yeah.
It is clearly 8:21. It is not 7:21.
Yeah. I thought it was weird that you were sending me that picture being like, hey, what time is this?
I wanted to make sure I wasn't the one who had forgotten how to tell analog time.
They are very fancy watches, so I don't know if there's something going on. But, I mean, that's a 6 down there.
Now, in the next scene where we see the watches again, it is at 7:21.
Yeah, I don't know. That's strange. It's not like they have to account for like central time and
it's daylight like, savings.
Everybody's
time.
In Gotham City.
Well, whatever time it is, they're really starting to focus that the watches and the time all have something to tell them, and they're all important. And Turner's got a light bulb that goes off in his head.
Yeah.
You can almost see it on screen.
He's got the flashback to Joe Chill just continually saying, watches all the time, watches all the time.
And the watches were the key to finding the court. That's what he told them. That line was the key to finding the court.
And Stephanie gets it, 9 p.m. on the dot. The other ones are latitude and longitude. And I've been seeing people call them sharper. Stephanie and Harper.
Oh, okay.
I guess that's better than Steffer.
Yeah, Sharper's better.
But Dwella is saying, oh, that sounds like a leap. And Harper, you know, hops in with a damn good one, let her finish, which is very different from the start of their
Oh, yeah, it's a 180.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a look, a little cute smile that Stephanie gives Harper.
And they keep going on and talking about it. And then Duella comments, "I feel like I'm watching nerd porn." Thought that was pretty great.
That was a great line. She is hilarious.
Turner says he kind of thinks that they're going to have an in-person meeting. His dad had that theory that that's what they did, so that you would have to be there to get the information. It wouldn't be written down.
Yeah, and the only way to get those times and coordinates is to have one of the watches given to you by the court. So it makes sense on how to keep all their stuff very, very secret.
And they're kind of discussing why meet now. What is their thing? And Joel is like, maybe they're going to do an art show. And they're going to celebrate with one of those parties that Eunice used to go to.
We shall see.
So we come back from commercial break and they figured out the location, the old Gotham Light and Power facility.
It's pointed out that they always held their parties in very strange places. The newspaper, or they, I think it's like a Wikipedia kind of entry on the Gotham Light and Power that they're looking at. It's centuries old and it goes all the way back to old Gotham. So it would make sense that the court has some kind of holdings in that building and they were able to use it.
Yeah, and it was closed down in 1989, so no one else is doing that right now.
That's not an important year for Batman.
No. Gene W. Mason was the one that founded it. Do you know anything?
I tried. Couldn't find anything, but could just be missing it. I also tried figuring out what the 2234 hertz or gigawatts or whatever it was, the power plant. I was like, oh, I wonder if that means something. But I was running a little late on my rewatch, so I couldn't spend too much time falling down my rabbit holes. Stephanie is pulled away from these discoveries and the planning of their next steps by a phone call. And it's the pharmacist calling to tell her that her prescription has been filled and she can come pick it up. And she tries to tell the doctor or the pharmacist on the other line that she doesn't have a prescription. And they insist that it's ready and that it was that the doctor called it in as an urgent matter that needed to be taken care of. So,
yeah, so she takes off suddenly without giving any explanation.
So we know Colin knows. Where do you think this is headed with her keeping the rest of the Gotham Knights in the dark about her home life?
I think that the secret's going to get out, whether she tells them or if it's announced publicly, like what Arthur seems to be concerned about.
I would imagine Turner will try his best to be supportive, but do you think he'll feel betrayed that she wasn't being open with him?
I could see Turner feeling that way. I don't think that that's right, because that's her private information. That it's not even her business. It's her mom's business. It's definitely affecting her, and that makes it her. But she doesn't need to share that with anyone that she doesn't want to.
She doesn't, no. It could definitely be a point. It was something that her and Colin kind of bonded over, or moments about their parents. It could also be something that her and Harper could share. I mean, obviously Colin and Harper had the same upbringing and have not the best parents, so
and I could
bring
them
closer.
Yeah, and I could see Harper putting the pieces together a lot quicker than Turner. I mean, she saw how Stephanie kind of went nuts with that barbell and or the dumbbell and smashed all those pills and how passionate she was to end that. So.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Harper hasn't already put it together and is maybe just not at a comfort level of bridging that gap with her yet.
Yeah. All right. And then we cut over to Lincoln. He's recording a video to Citizens of Gotham, coming to you as an attempted homicide victim, and all evidence points to Turner Hayes.
What evidence points to Turner Hayes? There's no evidence. He was stabbed in Harvey Dent's office by a masked man.
But with a sword, which is what was missing from Bruce Wayne's.
Okay. All right.
So they're assuming that Turner was the one that broke in, took the sword, which he did take the sword.
Right? He did take a sword, yes.
Yeah. And so okay. I think it's a major leap because, you know, we know it's not true.
And a damn good one.
Yeah. And Lincoln takes this moment to say, okay, well, he's still at large with the other fugitives because Harvey Dent hasn't got them. Where is Harvey Dent? And then we see exactly where Harvey Dent is, late, coming to his office.
Which, as his assistant is pointing out, he's late to multiple meetings and multiple expectations that he's not fulfilling right now. So it seems like these absences are growing more regular for him.
Mm-hmm. And he is kind of snapping at her and takes a moment to kind of calm himself down and then asks her to get Judge Stevens on the line. He needs to make a plea deal. And when she's asking for who, he will not tell.
Yep. And he watches the clock because they don't have a lot of time to get this done.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of time, back at the Belfry, they're still working on those watches and coming up with a plan here.
Turner. Good old Turner, ready to jump into the fire any moment's notice.
And the others are all like, no.
Yeah, he wants to infiltrate the court's meeting. He wants to, yeah, they don't know how yet. They know where they're going to meet, so why don't they catch them in the act is basically his plan.
He has a point, because they're like, let's get a plan together. Let's wait till next time. And he's like, what if there isn't a next time? We don't know how often they have these meetings. Who knows who's going to die in between this one and the next one and what they're up to.
I did like his line here that when they're telling him that, you know, this isn't something that you would do to some establishment as big as or as powerful as the court. And he's like, well, that's the thing about owls. They have no natural predators. They don't know what it's like to be hunted, which means that they won't see us coming. I did like that line. That's pretty good.
I did. But it's also like, Turner, they're not actual owls. I'm sure there are paranoid people in there, too.
When the Court of Owls storyline was first being done in the comics, I wasn't reading current Batman. I was lost in my older 80s and 90s continuity stuff. But I remember thinking, like, owls? Like, you're going to make a villain around owls? That sounds like the most unintimidating, like, might as well be penguins, but...
No, owls are vicious. They kill people.
Well, and they are bats, like, number one predator. And I didn't put that together for probably as long as it took you to put together the Talon thing. But I was like, oh, well, owls are the one thing that actually hunt and eat bats on the regular. I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense now.
Yeah, that does.
But owls unless you're the owl from Secret of the Nim, you're not really that scary. So
yeah,
somebody out there will know what I'm talking about.
Agree to disagree. I think all owls are scary. Except for maybe the Tootsie Pop guy. But, you know, he could turn. He could shove someone down a staircase.
He was an owl.
Anyways. Fortunately, the school has a 3D printer, and even though it takes a lot longer to 3D print stuff, Colin says that he can use the pictures from Eunice as the source material and to make a copy, two copies of the mask, but he only has time to get two done. So who will be going in?
Who would you send if you had to pick two of the knights?
Well, I mean, I think there was no talking turnaround of going.
Right. He would have just shown up if he tried to stop him anyways.
I think I would... who I would send? I think this logically makes the most sense because Colin and Harper are both like, this is stupid, I'm not going. Carrie's not going to do it.
Yeah.
Carrie would probably be the best one to go in with him because they've proven that they work well together and they trust each other.
But I think you need a little bit of the dark side on your side when you're going to the belly of the beast, right?
I would probably, if Carrie wasn't available, I would choose Dwella.
I just think Colin's already proven himself with his acting abilities and his use of disguise. Like, he was probably the more natural choice for this mission. But again, like you said, I don't think he could have stopped Turner. So
no, not at all.
Before we see this plan brought to light, Rebecca makes a quick call to Harvey. A very panicked, concern call, and she explains that she thinks that Lincoln knows about their affair.
I love how Harvey says at first, he was like, yeah, Lincoln's coming down a little harder than usual. Yeah, he was just stabbed in your office after you called him there. It sounds like a setup.
It does. Yeah, like, Harvey.
Of course he's going to come down harder.
It was almost a little tongue-in-cheek that he was saying that. He wasn't really trying to give Lincoln too much trouble at that point, I don't think. And then he realized the crap that they're in, maybe. But he warns her that it's time to get Brody and her out of town.
Yeah, she tells him that there's a cruel other side of Lincoln that the press doesn't see, and that Rebecca is scared, and that he has spies everywhere. Yeah.
Almost like they're watching you at your hearth, watching you in your bed.
I couldn't think of any more of the rhyme I was going to join in. But yeah, they watches all the time.
Watches all the time.
Yeah, so Harvey says that he will get them out of there. I'm sure he gets right to work coming up with a plan. But we don't see that because we go over and see a speechless Turner. Literally speechless. As he's getting all dressed and getting ready to go to this big gala. Duella comes down the stairs in a fancy theater stage dress. Turner just straight up can't talk.
Yeah, it's almost like he's never seen a pretty girl before. Mm-hmm. We know he's kind of got eyes for Duella lately, and maybe just seeing her presented more in his world is kind of leaving him awestruck, which I felt a little weird about. Like, you know, like, if you like the girl, you like the girl. It doesn't matter what she's wearing, right?
Like, very much like a She's All That or any other 90s
TV. Any other 90s.
They do have a pretty important conversation after he finally, you know, gets his voice back. And she's telling him that she doesn't mind playing the hero if it's to save herself. He's like, oh, well, you're not used to being around all these hoity-toity
privileged asshats, I think is what he called them.
Yeah, and she's like, I'll be fine. Those with privilege are no different than con artists. And that she learned from the best con artist in Gotham, her mother.
So yeah, when she says the best con artist, like, I'm immediately assuming her dad, right? Mm-hmm. Or who we're assuming is her father. But she gives us a little bit of background about her mother. Her mother's been in Arkham ever since Duella was born. And she had taken on so many identities that they didn't even know who she was by the time she was incarcerated or admitted to Arkham.
And so many identities, even her mom didn't really know who she was.
Yeah, she was admitted as Jane Doe. Now, that's super interesting to me because that is a lot like the gold, silver age Joker's daughter. And what that character was, the confusion of who her actual parents were, what her actual identity was. She kept going back and forth. She'd wear almost a different costume every time she showed up. I'm wondering if they're trying to ground Duella a little bit more and let that part of the comic mythos live with her mom instead.
Yeah, that could be.
We haven't talked a whole lot about Duella's comic history. Her mother, the only time I could find reference to her mother is from an Earth 3 version of her mother, who was actually Three-Face, hero version of Two-Face.
Okay.
On Earth 3. And that was the only time I could find. Her name was Eve Dent back then.
So. Okay. Interesting.
It'd be interesting to see if we meet Duella's mom. She didn't say anything about her being dead or alive still.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps she is there in Arkham waiting for Duella to come visit. Turner reflects that it's been so long since his parents passed that he's having trouble even remembering what his mother looked like, which is sad.
It is sad. Also seems kind of out of place for him to say it here.
A little bit.
I don't. It just seemed like you're sharing this vulnerable, sad story with me, so my life is sad too.
Yeah.
Turner recently has been getting on my nerves with his throwing all caution to the wind. And I mean, they're making it like a joke that they're talking about stuff and he's just brooding in the corner. I trusted Cressida with everything.
But I think even in comics and movies, they often poke fun at Batman brooding on the rooftops and all that kind of stuff. So the fact that Turner has that from his dad and doesn't even realize it until now
Yeah.
I like it.
Oh, yeah.
I like that they're poking fun at it.
Yes.
Yes. They're aware, self-aware.
All right. And then we go over to Harvey showing up at the safe house, but Cressida isn't there.
Nope. And the house still is buttoned up. The window's still sealed and everything. So the house is still safe, but there's no Cressida. There is, however, a 1970s tape recorder on the bed.
Yeah, with a little sign that says, play me. And so Harvey does. And that same classical music starts up again. And the camera kind of rotates and turns. And we see Harvey start to change.
Yes. This was fascinating because last time we heard this music, it was on the other end of his cell phone and it cut to black. And this time we see him kind of try to push it off a little bit and like squint almost in pain at first. And then it turns into a smirk as the camera starts to tilt and go on edge.
Yeah.
I was so excited. We're going to see Big Bad Harv so soon. I'm sure it's fine, though. I'm sure he's just like, this is what he does before he goes like break dances with the kids in the streets or something.
Like, well, apparently before he hooks up with Rebecca most of the time.
Yeah. It's like his Marvin Gaye.
I wonder if it's the same song as last time. I'm wondering how like it works. If they're trying to just set him loose to do whatever he would do, or if they like will play the music and then we'll do like a, after the music plays to get him in that mindset, they like give him instructions.
Yeah. I would imagine we're probably going to find out pretty soon. What is important to take away is the tape recorder was left where Cressida was. The only people looking for Cressida are the court. So we didn't really know who was on the other end of the phone when the cell phone call happened. Well, you could make some assumptions, obviously, with the antagonist of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's
pretty clear.
Pretty clear that the court is pulling Harvey Dent's strings here.
Yeah.
Which just ups the risk that that brings. You know, if it had been the McKillens or an unseen antagonist that we haven't met yet, that would be one thing. But now we know how powerful and how evil the court can actually be, that them with Harvey is bad news bears.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Knights have found the secret meeting place. They've donned their costumes. They have their 3D printed masks. And they have their food truck. So off to the super secret, ultra hard to find, don't let anybody else but court members know where we are, secret meeting place, lined with flaming goblets of fire walkway.
Who do you think had the job to light all the candles and set up all those throughout the whole place? Like, do you think they have like these like C or D level members that's just all they have to do?
They probably call them like hatchlings or something. Owlets.
Yeah.
Go make the owlets do it. I like the ambiance in this rundown power and lights factory area, and there's these fancy people with their, we get the court masks, which I think the show has done a really good job capturing how creepy those masks are.
Oh yeah.
But it was almost laughable to me that how secretive all this has to be, and down the main drag of this factory building are a dozen fires lighting the way for everybody. But if it's like, I guess if the whole district and everything shut down, but like, I don't know.
It seemed like they were able to get the food truck pretty close too.
Yeah.
Like, seems like someone would notice that.
But we're finding out that the court isn't as cautious as they used to be, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
The Batman's gone. They don't feel like they have to play things as close anymore. So maybe they're just taking more and more dumb risks, and they let one of the idiot members do the decorations this time.
Maybe they were all like, oh, this is great. Let's light it up.
I can imagine that the Gotham City fire marshal is a member of the court. And he's just walking down that hallway with all the candles. And he's just sweating. Like, guys, this isn't cool. Come on.
What did you think about Harper upgrading Carrie's goggles?
So I like that Harper is going to be maybe our tech guru. That I thought was cool. And I like that Robin's the one running around with the Batman-esque gadgets. I don't think we see any benefit from those goggles in the rest of the episode. I don't even remember her using them.
I think she had them on when she was going and setting up that frequency augmenter.
Okay.
But, yeah, I don't know that it was so lit up from all the candles. I don't know that she needed the enhanced nighttime vision and all that. But yeah.
It's too bright.
Yeah. I couldn't get a read on what Carrie's opinion was. Like, she thanked her, but
did she mean it? Seem super genuine? Yeah, I couldn't tell.
Also, Harper just lifted those goggles from Carrie for long enough to do that stuff, and Carrie didn't notice.
Maybe that was Carrie's unease.
Yeah.
But her being, you know, her being the techie, that I get on board with that, if that is her role in the group.
Yeah. All right, so they got their masks, they got everything ready. But before we see them continue, we go over to the studio where Arthur Brown is talking with his fans. This scene made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, this episode, very good court stuff, very fun duella stuff, very heavy Stephanie story, line
B. Yeah. She gets him to go to her dressing room and is trying to have a very adult conversation about being worried about her mom. And Arthur, I can't tell how much of it he actually believes. Like, if he actually believes that she's in pain and that they're doing the right thing helping her. At this point, I couldn't tell.
Okay.
And then how much is him just wanting to ignore the problem and hoping it goes away on its own?
It comes out that her accident, that she's been taking all these pain pills, was 5 years ago, and they're filling prescriptions in both Stephanie and his name. And he knows about all this, and he says to do what's going to help your mom.
Mm-hmm. When Stephanie suggests getting her help, he says then the tabloids would get a hold of all this and they would find out.
And that's where it starts to change from kind of confused or concerned father to very clearly selfish and egotistical and self-involved. He doesn't want his name being dragged through the mud, like the identity and fame that he has built. Like we saw as the scene opened, he is coming to meet his adoring fans waiting for his autographs after his taping of this quiz show. He thinks that if the tabloids or the public finds out, that they will find out about it, and then they'll use it against them and tear them apart. All of that, like when the scene opened, I was super smiley and like, oh yeah, like, because he's wearing the classic orange and burgundy of his ultra ego from the comic books. And I was like, oh, that's great. And then he has his line talking to the fans about, you know, this episode doesn't air till next week, so remember, no spoilers, which is another alter ego of somebody in that scene.
Yep.
And so that was very fun, and I was excited about my research and Batman comic knowledge to come in, and then it hit really hard. I'm like, oh.
I can't be smiling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we won't know if Turner and Duella are smiling because they are under masks as they are approaching the court meeting. They find that the door is locked. Other members coming to the meeting are waiting off to a respectful distance, but waiting for them to go in.
Mm-hmm. There's also cameras watching them.
Yep. And they don't know how to get in. They try knocking. Door doesn't open. And Duella's like, we're going to die if we don't get this door open somehow.
Yeah. So fortunately, they see like the imprint of the court's symbol and figure out how to use the watch to open the door.
The watch was the actual key to finding the court.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a nice full circle. I'm glad we got there.
Yeah.
They get in and the hallways that we were joking about are just 1,000 candles. Thousands of candles. How they clear the evidence with all of that wax that's going to be everywhere, I don't know.
Yeah. and they go, they're walking in. Turner sees other couples are holding hands, so he grabs Joella's hand to play the part, which she allows it.
Cute.
They go through these red curtains to see a very fancy soiree. Everyone's in masks. There's a quartet playing. There's chandeliers, candles.
There's racks of swords.
And a little girl in pigtails with a doll.
She was adorable.
Joella comments, and I thought my childhood was messed up.
She's not just a little girl in pigtails with a doll. She's a little girl with pigtails and a doll in a Court of Owls mask.
Yeah.
A creepy little girl.
Yeah.
creepy.
Yep. Haunt your dreams kind of thing.
Before they can really take too much of an account of what's going on in this place or talk to anybody or really find out anything, the leader of the court steps out and addresses the group. The leader steps out with the assistance of a cane.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know it's supposed to be a mystery, and I guess it's a mystery to those who have not been watching the episode, because Turner and Duella did not see Lincoln March limp his way to his bed earlier in the scene.
Mm-hmm. He's moving around pretty well, though, right now.
Yes, he is. Or this person is.
Yeah.
this masked owl leader. Whoever this mystery character is. He addresses a group that after 100 long years, the map that Alan Wayne stole from them has been found.
Was it stole from them or hid from them?
Hid from them. You're right. Okay. I did write hid. I just can't read my own handwriting. No, he hid the map from them. And this is the map that we saw at the end of last episode that they burned away underneath the painting.
Yeah.
I did have a question about that scene, and I only watched that episode once, which I usually watch them twice for our reviews. So maybe I need to go back and look. But do you remember they burn all of the paintings that the art thief stole mm-hmm. that were Alan Wayne's collection?
Yes.
But it's only the final one that the whole episode was about obtaining and keeping that had the metal map underneath, correct?
Right.
Why did the court wait until they had all of the paintings to burn them to figure out which one had the map? Like, what if they just lucked out and got the right one on the first one and didn't yeah. have to bother with the other ones?
For dramatic effect.
Yeah. A little yeah. plot armor there, but I was thinking that maybe it would make a little bit more sense if the six paintings or whatever it was all had a piece of the map. That had to be combined kind of thing.
That would make sense, yeah. But it's easier for the knights to steal now if it's just the one.
They're going to steal the map?
I think they might. Oh. Because, as the leader announces, this map is the key to finding Electrum. And once they have that, they can master death.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, it's not. Why don't we go ahead and take a little break here? And we will be right back.
All right, when we return from the commercial break, we're back at the Browns mansion. Stephanie's mom is up waiting for her, and she's angry when she comes home.
She's angry, holding a glass of wine. Sounds like she's had a few glasses so far, and calls out Stephanie for coming in late, that the curfew isn't a suggestion, and Stephanie's like, well, I was with Dad down at the studio. Her mom starts going on about how Stephanie's a daddy's girl, and that her mother was right, that a man's only true love is his daughter. That felt like a weird thing to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of light being shown on the Browns family dynamic, the relationship between Arthur and... Have they given her her mom's name? I don't remember, but maybe in the credits, I'm sure it's yeah. there. I haven't written it down. I just call her her mom.
Yeah.
But Stephanie's mom and dad have what seems like a relationship based on he makes money and she remains in the shadows, or her problems or her addictions don't become the thing that tears them apart. Almost to the point that, like, keeping her medicated is keeping her quiet and passive and controllable for him.
Yeah.
But she did come after Stephanie hard in that scene and blames her for the love that her dad gives her, which is very hurtful.
I wasn't sure if it was also applying to anyone else in the show. You know, there's a lot of stuff about Duella and the Joker. But he obviously, from Duella's point of view, doesn't care about her at all. But the Talon, you know, he adores Eunice and still goes to visit her. I don't know. It just seemed like a loaded line.
I think the relationship of fathers and children in this show is definitely a key motivator of this season, for sure.
Yeah. Stephanie tells her mom that she shouldn't be drinking on her medication, which her mom's like, I know my limits. I've been taking this long enough. Stephanie sees the bottle, the prescription with her name on it.
Yeah.
She tried to cancel, but she went and got it anyways.
And she asks her mom if she ever thinks about how it affects her. And her mom snaps back that if it wasn't for Arthur, they wouldn't be able to go to the school that Stephanie goes to. And they owe it all to him to keep face and toe the line and all that. Man, it's putting all of that blame on Stephanie, who's clearly just trying to help and protect her mother from herself.
And so she does what she thinks is the right thing to do. And she steals the pills, locks herself in the bathroom. She is begging her mom through the door to stop as her mom's just slamming
in a rage. Yeah.
Screaming that Stephanie is such a bitch and just going on and on. And Stephanie flushes all the pills down the toilet.
I was worried that this was going to lead to Stephanie's mother's death in this episode. When we were watching, I think in this moment, I was like, wow, she's going to overdose on something else, or she's going to, you know, an accidental suicide of some kind. And I was concerned that Stephanie was about to lose her mother entirely in this moment. And
yeah,
it was another very heavy moment for Stephanie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Colin's having some tough moments of his own by trying to come to terms with how something like Electrum can even be real. How can there be a substance that could grant immortality? And he is blown away by the fact that this isn't a fantasy that they're living in right now.
Yeah, and Harper's like, oh, well, next time you talk to the 130-year-old Talon, maybe he can shed some light on it. And she is reading a blog entry referencing Gotham Gazette from the 20s, talking about a meteorite that was discovered by Dr. Leviticus, claiming to have healing properties. But before the results could be confirmed, the authorities discovered Leviticus was doing creepy surgeries on citizens of Gotham, and he left town.
Did they give a gender to Dr. Leviticus?
I don't remember if they did.
Okay. I believe in the comics, Dr. Leviticus is a she. But that's all in line with what that character is. From Nightwing, Volume 4, Number 1, we find out that Leviticus is the one that helped create the Electrum serum that keeps the Talon alive. So,
oh, okay.
Definitely pulling from some mythos there.
Colin's kind of pushing Harper, like, why, you know, isn't there anything else you can find? Harper's like, well, web sleuthing isn't really my forte. Blondie picked a hell of a day to ghost us. Colin's like, oh, see, your opinion's changing on her.
Siblings can always tell.
Yeah, but that conversation's interrupted by Turner coming over the comms saying, hey, new plan, we're going to steal the map.
Turner. Boy.
I understand we need to have the communication between the teams.
Yeah.
But there are other people at this.
There are 100 lethal, not none of them are actually lethal, but there are 100 court members all wanting your neck if they knew who you were.
Mm-hmm.
If you would think that you wouldn't be so, maybe they're really well mic'd. Maybe you just have to whisper real close to the mask and nobody else can hear you.
Maybe that's what it is. I'll take it that that's what it is.
Yeah, let's go with that, because he's just like, hey, new player, we're stealing the map.
And Duella gets on board with it right away. They watch the painting get taken into another room. And she straight up just punches Turner in the stomach.
That's why she's on board so quickly. She gets to hit him.
Yeah. And it works. It was very authentic when she takes him over, being like, oh, my husband isn't feeling well.
That accent wasn't as authentic. But
They go downstairs to a room with even more candles and a black curtain.
And the map's on display in this room, and they have all the access they need to it by themselves.
So they take off the masks.
Because they're hard to breathe in.
As soon as they do, these two guys come in.
Get a little action scene. Turner and Duella take on these two grown men who are clearly bodyguards, mm-hmm. probably with some training. And these kids knock them down relatively easily.
I mean, probably with training and everything, but how much do you think they actually, like, how much action do they see? Because serious, a talent.
Just send the talent. Yeah. That makes sense. But they're using, like, candelabra holders and stuff to, like, whack them.
Mm-hmm.
It is not quiet. They're not being very sleuthy about this tussle with these guys.
No.
But they're successful. Duella cuts out the map with her little switchblade.
Well, first she pulls a knife out, and Turner is rightfully scared.
Oh, that's right.
That she's going to stab him.
Yep. He's worried that that's where the plan is headed now. But luckily, it's just for her to cut the map out of the frame. She rolls it up, stuffs it up her dress, and out the door they go.
As they are walking through, like, the main area, the leader makes an announcement. There is a traitor in our midst. And they freeze.
Like, they freeze and turn, and there's 100 creepy owl masks staring at them.
But it's not them that they're looking at. Instead, the Talon brings in Cressida.
Uh-oh.
Turner has a lot of mixed emotions about this. Duell is just like, yeah, karma's a bitch.
Well, she is thrown to her knees in front of the whole court. The leader goes on about how they got her off the streets. They gave her a life and privilege that she would have never known. And how does she repay them? Yada, yada, yada. It's all about betrayal. Like, they've already made up their mind about her guilt or innocence. And this is just all showboating and theatrics, which the court is very good at. But,
and she tells, you're right. You did give me everything. It was gave me wealth, gave me power, and I had to kill and I had to lie, you know, to those that I cared about. And now that she knows what their whole plans are, she has grown a conscience.
And she's ready to accept the consequences because of the horrors that they seek to become. And who is the leader of the chant to, after the court decides her guilt, the leader of the chant to carry out the sentence?
That adorable little girl going, kill her, kill her.
Yeah. And Turner's like, I gotta stop this. Duell's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Just sit back and enjoy the show.
Yeah, she's like, we have the painting. Don't you remember everything that this woman did to you? And he tells Duella to go, take the map and leave. We see the Talon pull the sword. But before he swings, Turner straight up decapitates the Talon.
Chops his head off.
He had to move all the way up there, grab a sword, chop his head off without anyone calling it out.
Yeah.
But I guess everyone was so focused on watching, you know, the Talon and all that. Well, and probably terrified, like, I hope I'm not next. I hope I've done everything right.
Yeah, I think that's going to come back in a later scene in this episode. It's very clear that, like, everybody's hyper-focused on one specific thing and not aware of what's going on around them at all.
Yeah.
Eunice is going to be upset.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know how you come back from your head cut off, even when you're the Talon. We don't know the limits of his immortality. Yeah. But if good old Felix is done for good here, Eunice will not be a happy camper. When this happens, when the Talon's head hits the floor, the entire court flees like ants. I don't know what the term is. They just scatter to the wind.
Yeah.
The leader on the stage, this big commanding guy in a black cloak, just hauls butt with his cane right off, and everybody is just in chaos. I admit, like, yes, your headhunter was just decapitated, but these guys don't have a backbone, right? Like, they are pretty cowardly when faced with any kind of risk to themselves.
Or they're smart. You run away so the identity isn't, your identity isn't revealed, and that doesn't give away anyone else in the court.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Duella is making her way out and runs into two guys pop up. But fortunately, they're hit with some batarangs where Carrie drops down and gives Duella the assist.
I do like that she calls her little bird.
Yeah, Carrie doesn't like that.
No, but I like that too.
Yeah. And then Turner brings Cressida outside and she's asking him why. And he just tells her that it was the right thing to do, but you wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, taking time to take that dig, Turner. And they run off. They had to get out a different door than Duella did. And so they're off on their own and they're running out towards the woods of Gotham.
Meanwhile, Colin is freaking out that no one is back yet.
Yep, he's losing his cool. Carrie and Duella do make it to the truck, and they're wondering why Turner hasn't made it back as well.
And we cut to the woods to see why Turner hasn't made it back. He's confronting Cressida, and she says that she's turning because she felt guilty about his father, and then she found out about the Electrum. Said if they find it, they'll be an immortal dynasty continuing to grow fat off the city's misery. And we finally get an answer to what Bruce Wayne's will was changed to.
Yes, because Bruce understood that what was going to happen if they found it.
And he was going to give his fortune to the people of Gotham so the poor wouldn't need to turn to crime in order to survive. Crime thrives on poverty and the court thrives on crime.
I mean, when we were reflecting on when Titus told Turner about the will and that it was something that would change Gotham forever, I don't remember. Did we predict that he was going to dissolve his wealth into the city?
I don't remember. I don't think we did.
It seems like a no-brainer now.
Yeah.
I feel like we should have seen that coming. But it's great. I mean, it's one of the biggest things, the biggest complaints about the whole Batman character anyways. Like, this guy is rich beyond rich, and yet instead of using that wealth to better the city, he dresses like a bat and punches people.
Yeah.
So it was his dying wish to dissolve his wealth into the city. And I mean, you can't really fix the class system like that, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't actually work by just giving money to people, because then the money scale just changes. But it's a nice thought.
Yeah.
And maybe it's all about humanitarian projects and stuff like that.
Well, it would also give people a chance to get out, to find a life outside of Gotham City.
Yes.
I'm sure Harper and Colin would be ecstatic if that happened.
So now I would imagine having that piece of knowledge that that's what Bruce's final wishes had been for his family's fortune. It's only more important that Turner clear his name and fulfill that promise that Bruce wanted.
Yeah.
Or Turner's just going to keep it for himself. Him and Duella will have live happily ever after.
He asks Cressida for a name, but, you know, as she's telling him, it's not that simple. And before she can answer, she gets stabbed by the leader.
They're in the woods alone, not in a very, I mean, it's woods, but it's night. I mean, it's dark. But these guys come out of nowhere, and it's not one court member. It's the court. The whole court is now behind Cressida as she has a sword run through her, just like Lincoln did. You didn't see that coming. You didn't look around. Turner. The trick you just pulled got pulled on you, buddy.
Yeah. I'm also wondering if they have, maybe they don't have the Electrum that the Talon has. But like, Lincoln healed pretty fast.
Yeah.
And they get away with a lot. I wonder if there is any other supernatural element that members of the court may have.
Could be.
But it could just be as simple as Turner was so focused on Cressida that he couldn't see the woods through the trees.
Yeah. They end Cressida, but they aren't ready to end Turner. Before, with a knife to the throat, the leader stops the other court members and says, no, we have plans for this one. And the knights aren't able to reach their friend. The communication is cut off to Turner.
And Duella looks actually upset.
Maybe she's not as hard and tough as she comes across sometimes.
Maybe not.
Oh boy. So things are not getting any better at the Browns. Her mom has been put to bed and her dad is home. And his ponytail's down. He looks like a different person now.
Yeah. And the place is trashed. And Arthur comes in and blames Stephanie.
Yep. He says, if I ask you to help your mother, you help her. And she tries to tell him that she's out of control and you can't. And he says, yes, I can. Like, obviously, Arthur is pulling the strings in this family.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not necessarily a gentle pulling and tugging. He is leading with, I don't want to say a fist yet, but he's showing a side of him that is not the loving, charming dad that we saw in earlier episodes.
And I wonder if Stephanie has ever seen this side of him before.
It seems to take her by surprise and hurt her again after all the stuff with her mom has been hurting her this evening.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But he blames her. He blames, like, outright, who made her do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. He is an enabler. He is a bad dude.
He really is. Oh, I feel awful for Stephanie. And, like, I hope she does either go and talk to Colin or find someone that she can talk with about it. Because she's right. But it is hard when you're the child. Like, you don't have much power there.
Yeah. And he, although is just a game show host, it seems like he could actually be somewhat of a powerful man, right? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of class issues in this show between the privileged and the non-privileged. And we see the power he has to run his family with the privileges that he has.
Mm-hmm.
Duella wants to go back and find Turner. They're at the food truck. They don't know what's going on with their friend. And it's Carrie and Harper stopping her.
Yeah, Carrie tells her, because they were able to hear over the comms, that they have plans for Turner. And so she's like, they're not going to kill him. If they wanted him dead, they already would have done that. So we need to regroup, we need to make a plan, and we live to fight another day.
Duella's not having it. She calls them the Gotham Knight cowards, and she's broken up. She is distraught. And she's ready to run back into the fray to get Turner out.
And back over in the woods, we see them put a bag over Turner's head, and the court leads him off. The leader stares up at the full moon, takes off his mask, and surprise!
It's Lincoln March.
What?
I get it. It was a little funny to me. I'm like, okay, obviously it's Lincoln. But nobody else saw that, right? So, like, that moment was for the audience. It wasn't for Turner. He has a bag over his head.
Right. It was just for us to confirm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We go from a black screen to eyes opening, point of view from behind the mask. I think that was really well done.
When it bookends the point of view from the trunk of the car at the beginning of the episode. So
mm-hmm.
We end it with a point of view kind of shot as well.
Yeah, and we slowly see Harvey alone in a room. He has a mask on.
An owl mask.
Yeah. And it's some kind of wooden building. I couldn't tell like where it was.
Yeah, it's kind of open, boarding. It doesn't look like a finished, or maybe it's a rundown kind of facility of some kind.
Yeah.
The mask is covered in blood. He's covered in blood.
Whose blood?
He's alone and confused. So are we. That's where it ends.
You immediately thought that he killed Rebecca.
I 100% believe that Lincoln's thank you for giving me the pieces I need to move Harvey where we want him and end you. And I think they sent Harvey to kill Rebecca. And I think they're going to use that to drag Harvey down.
And I'm torn because I think that makes sense. But she just seems like a big character to have an off-screen death. But at the same time, if it's Harvey who's ending her, they wouldn't want to show that because then we would automatically, like, your gut reaction would just be to dislike Harvey.
Yes. They need us to like Harvey until the fateful moment of his scarring, I think.
Yeah.
I also shared a theory of how that might come from this event as well in my thoughts, that Rebecca is tied to the McKillens, maybe. She's probably from a powerful family if she married somebody powerful like Lincoln.
Yeah.
That usually goes hand in hand, and it kind of seems like their marriage was more of a status than a love kind of marriage anyways. So if she was actually like the sister or a relative of the McKillens, and we know in the comic book version it's the McKillens that scar the new 52 Harvey. My current theory is that this is not only to take Harvey out of the picture, but also punish the McKillens for the loss of the money and the other jobs that they've been failing for the court and exposing the ledger and everything to the Gotham Knights, that this is somewhat punishment for them and by removing Rebecca, if that's who she actually is.
Yeah.
Or it could just be to blackmail Harvey.
Yeah.
So I had some questions for you. We just talked about whose blood it is. That was my big one. Do you think that Duella will be put into a position of having to trade the map for Turner now?
Oh, interesting. Because she was adamant that that cop's family was not worth it.
That there's always a choice, but they made the wrong one. Could the choice be put in front of her now? And would she make the same choice if it was him?
I don't know that she would. I don't know that she would give them Electrum. I don't know that that's her just looking out for herself or if that's being smart.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to, does she value Turner more than fear the court, maybe?
Yeah. Does she think that she could just take Turner and they could run away, leave Gotham, and then the court's not their issue anymore?
Yeah. So we're a little over halfway through the season, and I feel like there's a lot of big movement happening right now.
Yeah. We come back next week with episode 109, Dark Knight of the Soul. I like the Dark Knight reference there. I wonder if we'll get like a flashback to, because who knows what Turner's going to be going into. You mentioned something about Batman having to do a labyrinth.
Yes. And then
in the comics,
the court traps Bruce Wayne Batman in a labyrinth and he gets some hallucinogens and drugs in his system and kind of loses his mind for a while.
So that would be kind of cool to have Turner if he was in that situation. And then if he was hallucinating and saw his dad there, it would not be an actual thing, but it could help provide him closure or something if he hallucinates a conversation with his dad.
Well, and he has just been kind of on an upward climb of confidence and his risk-taking and his heroicism. I think we could be seeing him knock down a notch or two in this next episode if he's now in the hands of the court.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this coming week's episode. It's going to looks like it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us this week. If you would like to listen to us elsewhere, I will be returning on What's New Nancy Drew as the new season starts in just a few weeks.
Yay! Yeah, you guys have your first recording scheduled already.
Yeah, I'm going to do kind of a trailer review.
If you enjoyed Ben on our last episode, catch him with Sarah on What's New Nancy Drew when those new episodes start coming out.
Yeah. You can also catch him on the Brotherhood of Batman with Jake, where they review all sorts of Dark Knight stories.
Yeah, we're a lot more silly over there.
All right, so thank you everyone for tuning in. We look forward to talking with you next week as we cover Dark Knight of the Soul.
Bye.
What is the perfect movie franchise? Does such a thing truly exist? The License to Watch podcast sets out to answer that age-old question. Join comedians Matt McGregor, Harris McCabe, and Colin Shaw as they dissect your favorite film franchises one movie at a time. Along for the ride is a different film industry guest for every episode. Listen as the boys play judge, jury, and executioner and decide which of your favorite movie franchises are worthy of a license to watch.